Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast was co-hosted by the Federalist Society's Corporation, Securities, and Antitrust Practice Group and the Financial Services and E-Commerce Practice Group. It was recorded on Friday, March 8, 2013, during a live telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group telephone conference call on the death of corporate reputation. My name is Christian Corrigan, Director of Publications here at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Also, this call is being recorded for use as a podcast in the future. Today, we welcome Professor Jonathan R. Macy, the Sam Harris Professor of Corporate Law and Corporate Finance and Securities Law at Yale Law School. Professor Macy is here to discuss his new book, The Death of Corporate Reputation, How Integrity Has Been Destroyed on Wall Street, which will be released in April and is available for pre-order on Amazon.com. A more complete bio for Professor Macy was provided to you in notice of the call, so I will stop there and preserve more time for his presentation, followed by your questions. Professor Macy, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Christian, for inviting me and arranging for this call. I want to just say a few words about the book that I've written. It's called The Death of Corporate Reputation, and it is coming out from the Financial Times Press in either late March or the first week in April. And what the book talks about is the economic models of reputation that have been used in the past and are still being used to describe the incentives that apply to investment banks, commercial banks, law firms, accounting firms, credit rating agencies, and other denizens of the Wall Street financial world. And it begins with what I describe as the traditional reputational model, which says that reputation is a very large asset for companies like in this space, and that people will invest in reputations because companies will invest in their reputations because it allows them to charge more for their product and have a more loyal customer base. So, by way of example, in a world with no regulation, people would pay money to credit rating agencies for a rating because the ratings confer a reputational advantage on the company, and companies are willing to pay. Companies who are issuing debt and otherwise going into the capital markets will be willing to pay an amount up to the amount that they can save on their financing costs by obtaining a rating. Similar kind of analysis applies to all outside audits of a company's financial condition, and having an investment bank, a top-tier bulge bracket investment bank, underwrite a company's securities, and having also kind of a blue-chip law firm. And the story of the book is essentially that this traditional kind of good story reputational model has largely been eviscerated due to three primary factors. One is that information markets are much, much better now, so individual reputation of actors within firms is more important than firm reputation, and that people have less invested in their firms as a consequence of their individual reputations and other factors. So their people's livelihood is less tied to their firm and more to their own personal reputations and human capital. A second factor is the increasing amount and complexity of regulation, which has caused technical expertise to replace reputation as the primary criteria on which customers choose who to do business with in today's market, and also because regulation is a substitute for reputation. People who think they're being protected by regulation don't have an incentive to pay a premium for going with a high reputation firm, and also because regulation has led to a diminution in competition and cartelization in the industry. And then we also have the increase in the requirement of or the demand for rainmaking, which has also been a substitute for reputation. So essentially the idea is that there's sort of there was for decades a kind of economic incentive-based competition that was provided a very important social good in the form of firms striving to increase their reputations, and that that has dissipated over the years, and that's been a major kind of underlying cause for the financial crisis. And the book goes through these various industry actors like the credit rating agencies and the accounting firms, and describes how reputation in each of these cases in various ways has become less important part of their business model. And then and the book also describes some examples of cases where firms who have lost their reputations have actually failed, firms like Bankers Trust Company and Salomon Brothers, and then explains makes the argument that really no longer occurs, as firms can survive major declines in their reputations without there being apparently suffering loss of business or market share. So that's what the book says. I'd be delighted to talk about it if anyone has any questions to talk about it for the rest of the call. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Macy. I'll now open the floor up to the audience's questions. In a moment, you will hear a prompt that will say the floor mode is on. After that, to request the floor, enter star and then the pound key. That is, again, to ask a question, press star and then the pound key. A quick programming note, our next telephone conference call will be on Monday, March 11th at 2 p.m. on the Amgen case and whether materiality is required to certify a securities fraud class action. We also have one on Tuesday at 2 p.m. On cybersecurity, as well as one next Wednesday with Peter Wallison on bad history, worse policy, and what led to the Dodd-Frank Act. We do have one question on the line, so we'll go ahead and go to that caller.
Hello.
Yes, my question for Professor Macy is his analysis limited to the financial industry? Because it would seem to me that corporate reputation is still important with respect to consumer-based corporations that are selling goods and services directly to the consumer.
Oh, I completely agree with that. In fact, no, I think that's a very important point. It really is based on essentially companies in the financial space, particularly in, you know, financial companies that are regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission. I think that you're absolutely right. If someone's purchasing a product, then reputation becomes much more important. And then, of course, in terms of, you know, internet marketing, reputation is also very important on places like Amazon, et cetera. One of the ironies that I talk about in the book is that there are ways in manufacturing that companies can build reputation rather quickly. For example, you know, I talk in there are these car companies like Hyundai who have had very low reputations, and then they offered extremely aggressive warranty programs and guarantees and the like, and companies can adopt policies like no questions asked return policies. But of course, in the security space, that's the nature of the product makes that impossible, because you know, if you buy a share of stock in Enron, if yours becomes worthless, everybody else's becomes worthless too, and the company's worthless, so it can't really offer any sort of guarantee or warranty. Whereas if you're making a car or a refrigerator, you can have a guarantee because you can have internal quality controls, and you can predict with some accuracy you know, the what fraction, what percentage of the products you make will be faulty, and you can build that into the price of the product. So my point is, A, I agree with you about the manufacturing issue. B, I think that reputation is actually more important in many ways in finance, and yet we don't have because of these lack of substitutes, and therefore its loss is felt much more acutely as far as having a kind of a broader economic consequences.
So let me ask two follow-ups. One is, and maybe you've already answered this, but I'd like you to delve a little deeper, is this actually a bad thing? Meaning that we have so much more data and information, whereas, you know, reputation is sort of ambiguous and nebulous, and firms may have good reputations, but they're really not, you know, good actors. So one thing, is this actually a bad thing with respect to the financial markets? And then the second question is, to what degree are the financial actors responsible for this themselves, meaning that they just simply don't care anymore? And when we talk about, you know, Goldman Sachs and the Abacus deal and Paulson and how,
right,
you know, they were on both sides of the transaction. So if you could talk about, you know, answer both of those kinds of concepts, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, no, those are two. I like those questions very much. The first one is, I'll take the first one first, which is this such a bad thing? My answer to that is, it depends on who you are, in a way. That is to say, if somebody is, a very sophisticated counterparty to Goldman Sachs, like, you know, John Paulson in the some of these cases, then the answer is no, that people can fend for themselves. It's a laissez-faire world, and people are able to do due diligence, and so there's not, you know, it isn't a problem. I do think, though, that the lack of reputation is a problem both for the broader economy and for smaller investors, because small investors add a lot of liquidity to the market, and small investors, kind of retail investors, if you will, are an important factor in the market, even though they're not the largest factor because they've been replaced by institutional investors. But nevertheless, I think that it's not a good thing to have a situation where people think that Wall Street is a fixed game, and as a consequence, firms that want to, might have had access to the capital markets in the past will not have access to the capital markets because of this lack of trust, and they'll have to look for substitutes, which are a little maybe more expensive, and that will be, that's the cost. In terms of the, with respect to, your question about have firms brought this on themselves. The answer to that is unequivocally yes. Firms are responding to incentives. So when we had a move from having investment banks doing business in the general partnership form to the current situation where they're doing business as publicly held companies, that brought with it less accountability, because there was less incentives among the principals in these firms to be accountable. And then with respect to in terms of greater focus on greater efficiency of information markets, one of the things I do in the book is look at the fall of Arthur Andersen and the fall of Lehman Brothers and ask the question, where did the professionals go in these firms? The answer is they landed on their feet. That the all but an infinitesimal minority, went to work for rival accounting firms, or in the case of Lehman, went to work for Barclays or one of the other firms that sprouted up in the, in the wake of Lehman's demise. So, that people are less willing to invest in the reputation of their firms, A, when there's no personal cost to them, in terms of direct liability when the firm fails, and B, when there's no indirect cost in the sense that they can, you know, move fairly seamlessly, to other jobs. And so I think that's quite important. You know, another chapter in this book with respect to the second question was just yesterday or the day before when the Attorney General Eric Holder was giving the speech in which he says, you know, some financial institutions are too big to prosecute. So the idea that just generally speaking, for a variety of reasons, the costs of engaging in fraud or mistreating customers or engaging in sharp practices that may be profitable in the short term, the cost of all that stuff has declined. And so, you know, and that firms are responding to those, you know, firms are responding to those incentives.
Okay, we have two questions on the line, and then our lines will be open. So again, if you have a question, please press star and then the pound key.
Hi, thanks for doing the call. My question is related to the last question. I was able to, even though the book isn't out yet, there, you know, Amazon has a little, you know, preview. I noticed on the chapter on Goldman Sachs, the three transactions that you used as examples were the Abacus transaction, the El Paso transaction, and the Greg Smith editorial. And, you know, all three of these deals kind of seem like, I was wondering, are you looking at these reputational issues from these transactions from the perspective of, you know, the actual customers of Goldman Sachs, which are typically, you know, if not high net worth individuals, they're large institutions. And I kind of, you know, I can envision a world where all three of those examples are primarily, a more retail, kind of a public media reputational risk. Is it possible that part of the reason why Goldman still trades at a premium and why they might still, you know, is also partly because of the economic models you've mentioned, but also just because customers don't see those as hurting Goldman's reputation because they disagree with kind of the public's general perception? For example, I can imagine a world where most people just kind of scoffed in the financial world. The customers kind of scoffed at Greg Smith's op-ed, and you know, he kind of brushed it off as someone who was disgruntled because he didn't get the promotion to managing director, or you know, in the Abacus transaction, kind of scoffed at that because you know they think that disclosure was good and this was you know a normal practice, etc. And you know, I guess is there information that the customer's reputation or perception of reputation of Goldman Sachs has been declined? Well, I mean, I think we know that, you know, consumer/public reputation has been harmed. And kind of what information do we have about how customers are reacting to all that? Thanks.
Well, in some transactions, albeit, you know, with respect to Goldman, the customers are wealthy, but you know they do have retail customers. It's a good question. It's hard to really show empirically what these companies, you know, what kind of business they would have done. I think that with respect to the customer base, my own view is that often, and this would be true with the Abacus transaction as an example, there will be a customer who benefits in a transaction, and other customers, these German banks that were involved in that transaction, who lose, and you know, so I think that there are, you know, some customers who are more favored than others, and you know, and so you know, I think that 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 is, you know, an important issue. There's another thing that I, case that I talk about in the book. I don't think that you mentioned. There's a fraud suit, civil fraud, private class action lawsuit that's been brought against Goldman Sachs, and the premise of the lawsuit is that Goldman Sachs, in its public filings, describes itself as having it says that reputation is one of its most important assets, and that it has, it puts the customer first, et cetera. And a customer said that that was fraud because it wasn't true. And interestingly, everybody, including me, to some extent, thought this was kind of a cranky lawsuit, but it survived the motion to dismiss stage. And interestingly, in the court papers, Goldman's response was not that the claims in the complaint were untrue, but that nobody believed them, and that they weren't material to investors' decisions. I have to confess that there's not hard data, just because I wasn't imaginative enough, I guess, in the book to figure out what sort of data one would look at. But there's not hard data about, this is what, how customers are responding. But there's a great deal of anecdotal data and some data in cases, that does suggest there's at least some, there is some reputational cost. And of course, at least in theory, there's opportunities. That is to say, if you imagine a firm that people don't want to do business with because of its reputation, at least in theory, that would provide an opportunity for new entrants to come in who either, don't have a negative reputation or are, able or willing to build a reputation for themselves.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have one more question on the line right now, and then our lines will be open. Again, to ask a question and request the floor, please press star and then the pound key.
Thank you for a very interesting presentation and a very intriguing idea. I wonder if you could speculate way beyond the financial world. I'm thinking of companies across the board tend to devalue the reputation element of their business. Might that be part of a much larger phenomenon where schools, plumbers, nightclubs, maybe churches, neighbors, even individuals do sort of the same thing, and they devalue or minimize the emphasis they put on reputation or reputation for good character? And if you'll indulge that thought for a moment, how would that, first of all, I'd like to know if you think it is part of something bigger, and how we would find out, how we would assess that question, and how would that affect the life of a people if it is?
I think that's a really interesting and important question. My own view of this is that that for a couple of reasons, it does appear that there is a secular decline in the emphasis and focus on reputation. I think there are a couple of reasons for that. One is simply that we live in a much different age than 50, 60 years ago, in the sense that there's a much, that one of the consequences of modern times has been a significant growth in moral relativism, and the idea that, well, maybe there is no good necessarily or bad, and the idea of there being a clear-cut right and wrong, and that people should live their lives to be on the right side of an issue from an ethical perspective, is something that has been, unfortunately, on the wane, and there's a much greater kind of emphasis on being contextual, and that people need to be given, various advantages and disadvantages, and the game should be rigged. I think another problem is a slightly more subtle problem is, you know, society has gotten much more complex, and this complexity has led to the idea that while people talk about the global world and the interconnected world, the fact is people live in very discrete social zones. So folks at investment banks tend to hang out with folks in investment banks, and lawyers hang out with lawyers, and so people's social lives is much more focused on their colleagues at work, and as a consequence of that, the investment banking world having a decline in reputation really doesn't matter as much to the investment bankers. It's not as much of a cost for them because their world is people in the same business, and they don't in their particular orbit, if you will. What people outside the orbit think about their business or their industry is not so important because they don't interface with that or interact with that. So yeah, I mean, I think it is an issue. Hopefully, I'm not a complete pessimist. Hopefully, there's a certain amount of cyclical nature to this, or kind of a pendulum, and that, now we've swung very far in one direction. Maybe we'll be swinging back in the other. Although I certainly don't think the Attorney General helped things anymore, very much by saying that, that some firms are above the law because they're so, financial firms because they're so big. I found that rather demoralizing and depressing.
Okay, we have one more question on the line, and then our lines will be open. To request the floor mode, please press star and then the pound key. And we'll go to our next question now.
One of the functions of law, primary functions of law, is to reduce or mitigate the negative externalities, the behavior or transactions of two parties. And I was wondering how much you think that the breakdown in reputation that you've seen in the financial firms has contributed to broader systemic breakdowns in the financial markets, which have impacted all of us. And putting Dodd-Frank aside, if you think that's the case, what do you believe is the appropriate public policy response to sort of address this reputational disregard in certain quarters, but has those broader impacts, for other parties and perhaps the entire economy that you alluded to in the first question?
Yeah, no, that's a very difficult question, and one that has worried me a lot. Here's where I am on this issue, which is that, there's a very close and symbiotic relationship, as your question suggests, between regulation and reputation. One imagines a world, hypothetically, obviously, in which people thought that regulation worked perfectly. SEC regulation in terms of, anti-fraud and know your customer and churning and fiduciary duties. Then there would be no incentive for firms to invest in reputation because even the firm with no reputation would be able to do business because people would say, well, I'm not, this firm has no reputation, but the consumer regulations that Mr. Cordroy and the people at the SEC are coming up with will protect me. So in a way, the PR efforts of regulatory agencies like the SEC, who have to get themselves funded, require them to say, we're doing a great job at fixing fraud, which is only a bad thing to say to the extent that people believe it. So, my view is the best possible situation is to have an effective anti-fraud regime, but to have people think that it's very ineffective, so they take steps to protect themselves, Whereas, I think where we were in the financial crisis is people really were kind of drinking the SEC's Kool-Aid back in the early part of this, the 21st century, and saying, well, you know, we're protected by this. And I think, you know, I think that you know, explains a lot of certain of the frauds that we observed, like the Stanford fraud, in terms of these pyramid scheme with CDs, certificates of deposit, and the like. And I think it also, explains a lot of, Bernie Madoff. The people thought, well, the guy is, you know, regulated by the SEC, and they didn't really understand that the SEC only regulated a small part of his business, and that the SEC, generally speaking, wasn't really up to the task of ferreting out fraud anyway. So, you know, I think that where firms are not interested in their reputation, it's a particularly big problem if people don't understand that. Because then you have a very fertile environment for fraud to occur, because you have willing customers, but on the other hand, if people are get to be very cautious and cynical and suspicious, the good news is people don't get ripped off very much, but the bad news is the economy shrinks because people don't engage in financial transactions very much. Or as much as they otherwise would, I should say.
This is Christian Corrigan again. Our lines are open, so if you have a question, please press star and then the pound key, and you'll be able to get right through. Another programming note for us, we do have 4 Teleforum conference calls scheduled for next week, one on Monday, one on Tuesday, and then one on Wednesday, and then a new one scheduled on Friday. For the Federalist Society on the Clean Air Act and the Environmental Protection Agency's anticipated attempt to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from existing power plants, a new white paper written for us by William Hahn. And we'll move to the next question.
Are we waiting for a question, Christian?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, I was just I would just say one thing while if someone's formulating a question is that, I do think there's been a sea change in the way that people in the U.S. view business. You know, in the sense that there used to be a sense that the idea that sort of what's good for GM is good for America was believed by many, and I think correctly so, and that people thought that as long as business in the U.S. was complying with the law, then they were providing goods and services that people wanted and making life better for everybody and contributing, obviously, in making the American dream something tangible and within reach of people. I think that unfortunately, there's much more cynicism now, and one picks up the New York Times, and reads how horrible the food companies are, like General Mills and General Foods, and how bad the big banks are, and how bad the pharmaceutical companies are. That there's generally been. There generally is a distinct anti-business climate and a great deal of cynicism that I think provides a fertile ground for government regulation to be popular and accepted by people. And I think, the consumer, the recent bureaucracies created by the Dodd-Frank Act are cases in point. Particularly, of course, Mr. Corduroy's agency, which is designed to regulate in the financial space to protect consumers against these avaricious businesses that people believe exist today. So, Christian, is that all the questions? Should we?
Yes, Professor Macy, we have one more question.
Oh, good.
We just lost it. Someone was back on the line with their question. Here we are.
Jonathan, I'm not at all sure that the jungle and Sinclair didn't do just as much to denigrate business as anything the New York Times has been doing recently. But the question, I think, is Hayek pointed out we're going from sort of tribal morality where reputation and knowing your people are important to modern morality where a whole set of institutional arrangements take over. And the point you made earlier, regulation and then the suppression of private modernized reputation, credit ratings that really are credit ratings, not delegated by to the S&P as a nationally preferred regulatory agency, have weakened the ability to adopt to a modern morality, which would have an equivalent regulation reputation, but it'd be a modern form of that.
Yeah, I have, in terms of this sort of, you know, transition from tribal morality to more of a large market morality, you know, I think that the way I view it is, looking at the work of sociologists like Max Weber as well as Hayek's work, and that, which is to say, when we used to have trade only within a sort of clan or tribal basis, largely because people didn't trust anybody outside of the clan. And then with the rise of kind of morality-based religions, particularly Christianity, people thought, well, if I'm, dealing with people of the same faith, or who have, have strong kind of moral compasses, I can trust them and I can do business even in a regime of weak enforcement of contracts and the like. I can do business with a broader circle of people, which has, is very, very important for economic growth and for an economy to grow. Cause, we see, obviously in less developed countries in the Middle East and in Africa that if you're only doing, if your markets are constrained by the size of a clan or an extended family group, the economy's not going to do very well. And that, we need, that things like reputation grew up in order to, facilitate trade in extended markets. I think that the one thing I would kind of, I don't know if I'd say disagree, but kind of modify the perspective you were offering in your question is just to say, I think the from an economic and a social welfare perspective, the best thing is to have very broad markets that are vibrant and active and in which people can trust each other. And, it is extremely difficult to do this in environments that are over-regulated and, of course, under-regulated. That is, if they're under-regulated, that means contracts aren't being enforced. And if they're over-regulated, you have the government coming in and displacing traditional views of morality with, sets of regulations that people then try to game. And the more complex they get, the greater the gaming opportunities. And so I think we've moved in that latter direction. And I think that there should be an effort made, or I hope that we'll move in a direction in which, the people continue to, or can once again begin to feel, confident in doing business in extended and large, markets. And I think reputation is an important facilitator of that phenomenon,
I think the only point on that I'd add is that, we imagine what it would be like if we didn't have a Zygods or Amazon ratings of books and so forth. The market is continuously trying to provide reputational validation services, and regulation, the moral hazard of regulation, as you said earlier, tends to suppress those because who needs them? So all banks are the same, all investment firms are the same, all money markets are the same, and then when things go wrong, we look for more regulation. It's just, weird.
Yeah, your point about homogenization that you know, where I think it's a very, very important one. You know, it's clear to me that I think what you're saying is right about reputation. Although, you know, it seems to me that where you have the biggest competition for reputation is in those markets that are the least regulated. That is to say, there are plenty of substitutes for, you know, if anything you want to buy on Amazon, you can buy somewhere else by definition, because Amazon doesn't make anything. They're just an intermediary and a warehouser. So, you know, the reputation is critical to them. On the other hand, if you're a credit rating agency or you're a big four accounting firm, regulations require in a variety of contexts that companies do business with you. So, you know, your incentives to invest in reputation have diminished as a result of that.
Right. I agree.
This is Christian Corrigan again. We have an opportunity for one more question probably. So if you do have one last question, Professor Macy, our lines are open. You can press star and then the pound key. Again, a quick programming note, our next telephone call will be on Monday, March 11th at 2 p.m. On the Amgen case and whether materiality is required to certify a securities fraud class action.
Well, Christian, thank you so much for – oh, please, if there's another question, that'd be great.
No, actually, it doesn't look like we have any more questions on the line. It looks like we've exhausted them. So, Professor Macy, do you have any concluding thoughts?
Well, I would love to, you know, get people's comments when the book does come out. I think hopefully over the next few years there will be, you know, opportunities for firms to build reputations and to try to compete again across the reputational vector, because I think it's really important in terms of getting the economy moving forward again. And most of all, thank everyone who dialed in. I really appreciate it, and I hope people both read the book and also enjoy the book. So thank you all very much.
Well, on behalf of the Federalist Society, I want to thank our expert, Jonathan Macy. His book is available right now for pre-order on Amazon.com. Thank you to our audience. We welcome your feedback by email to info@fedsoc.org. And again, please do join us Monday, March 11th for our call on the Amgen case. And we are adjourned.
Okay. Thank you again. Take care.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.